It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Hey, welcome back to the Dory Monson Show with me, your guest host, Jason Matera, in the saddle, filling in for Dory as he's just taking a little breather because I can't believe the cold election is just right around the corner.
That's true. I know.
Right around the corner.
This year is flying by.
I know. So Dory will rest up and he'll give his astute and cutting commentary on the election and see if Seattle really is going to elect a woman, a city attorney who is a self-described abolitionist who wants to tear it all down. Yes. I don't really care about... Actually, I do care about mayor, but both candidates are just pitiful.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Bruce Harrell's the worst of... I mean, least of the worst. Least of the worst. But, you know, he's... not Lorena Gonzalez. My goodness. Or Lori, I think was her name in college, and she wanted to sound more ethnic. So is Lorena. Give her an edge up. I don't know why, because she's incompetent, and apparently... I heard the segment you guys did, how much debt she's in.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. My goodness. I'm like, I'm in my car and listening to, and this woman wants to run the city.
Right.
She owes what? Like at least $100,000 maybe in taxes federally. She's
she defaulted on student loans.
Her student loans. And she had to buy the Beamer. She had to buy the Beamer. Yes. This woman, by the way, right? Well, isn't it typical of leftists? Pay your fair share. They tell people and they wag their finger. And this person hasn't paid her fair share.
Right.
Literally, it was the IRS up to 100. How do you go about?
Well, and isn't it funny that nobody else has talked about that? Nobody else in the media has picked up that story. Nobody else.
Do you know why?
Mentions.
Because they want Lorena Gonzalez elected. It's that simple.
I know.
They are voting for Lorena Gonzalez. The Brandy Cruises of the world are, unfortunately, there aren't many of them.
Right.
But yes, has nothing to do with the fastest. Actually, it does, because we're talking about the IRS. We're going to get to the fastest 15. And starting off with the Biden administration, they had this insane rule with their Build Back Better plan. I think that's what it's called. Their budget, which started at like $5 trillion, then went to $3.5 trillion. Now it's right under $2 trillion. It's all funny money at this point, right? Because we're just having the Federal Reserve print money, quantitative easing, and they're just shooting out bills every single day. Thus, the inflation, which is not transitory, but is here to stay. So anyway, this Build Back Better plan originally wanted the IRS, if you recall, to have banks report to them if there were transactions totaling more than $600 in an account. So if you had more than $600 of transactions in one of your bank accounts, they want the bank to report this to the IRS. And their rationale, Biden's administration rationale was, well, we want to catch those tax-dodging billionaires and millionaires. And then the logical question was, okay, if you're going to do that, hey, come to Seattle, get Lorena Gonzalez. She owes $100,000. And gets, you know, then chip away at the budget deficit there. But if you're $600, if you're not targeting billionaires and millionaires, who hasn't used $600 in a transaction over the course of a year? It was a pretty absurd benchmark. So they said, all right, we're not going to do that. We're going to have it at $10,000. But still, Nicole, $10,000 to have the IRS snooping on your account. Because you have engaged in $10,000 worth of transactions is not targeting people who are uber wealthy, who may be evading their taxes, right? Because again, who hasn't engaged in $10,000 worth of transactions? If you're like myself, what I do so I can get points on my credit card is I pay for things on my credit card, and then when the bill comes monthly, I pay the credit card.
Right.
I exceed $10,000 of credit card charges and payments every year, right? Which is easy to do with me. You have a family of six people in my house. $10,000 is nothing for just food and all the other stuff.
Right.
I mean, we're exceeding it. That means the IRS would have authorization to snoop on my bank account to make sure that I am not dodging taxes. This is incredibly intrusive. It is incredibly invasive. And banks should not comply with this. But it just goes to show you that whether we're talking about COVID or whether we're talking about these new proposed IRS rules, The left doesn't give a squirrel's rear end about your privacy. Does not care one bit. They are as intrusive as they can possibly be to monitor your life. And by the way, why should we trust the IRS with more information about our lives? We already know that was Jeff Bezos's tax returns were leaked, among other people. They were leaked. This is supposed to be confidential data. And yet someone at the IRS, for some ideological bone to pick, right, to make some ideological point, leaked private data. That will only increase. Americans will only be targeted further and not less so. Certainly not millionaires and billionaires who, by the way, evade taxes the legal way because they can hire boatloads of accountants to make sure that they exercise every single law that allows them to do so. Okay. And on Biden, he was in, I think it was Scranton, Pennsylvania yesterday, talking about his Build Back America. By the way, even the name, it's so patronizing. You can only build back America, apparently, with government money. Or taxpayer money that the government then goes ahead and distributes to their agencies and their bureaucrats. No. The left's premise is always you build back America through the brute force of government, through the enlightened eyes of the Anthony Faucis of the world, not through letting you keep your money, reducing regulations over your business, and allowing you, the individual, you, the entrepreneur, you, the worker, to build back your community in a better way. No, somehow, only some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C., with all these hideous looking buildings. Nicole, have you been to Washington, D.C. lately? I mean, I'm sure you've been.
I've been there, but okay. Not lately.
These government buildings are hideous. They're awful. Just these cement blocks everywhere. And the Build Back America program is premised that the bureaucrats who staff these agencies know how to run from a central location our lives, our businesses, our families, everything. From Washington, D.C. Anyway, so Biden, this bill now has been scaled back supposedly to around $2 trillion to get the support of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, who's turned out to be like a badass senator, I must say, and will probably win re-election as a Democrat in Arizona handily. She was the one who was chased in the restroom by one of these progressive lunatics, badgering her about, why don't you support DACA? I got a prime candidate for deportation. The woman who followed Kyrsten Sinema into the bathroom. Imagine that. You're going to try to take a leak in privacy and some lunatic is in there with the iPhone asking you political questions. Amazing. So Biden says that he's in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Says why are we even concerned about this money? It's all free.
When you talk about the number, we shouldn't even talk about the numbers because it's all paid for, written in the same piece of legislation.
Oh, it's all paid for. Why are we even talking about the budget deficit? Why are we even talking about this? Why have we even talking about inflation? Why have we been talking about having more entitlements? We can't even afford our current entitlements. Why are we talking about adding new entitlements? It's all paid for. No, it's not. It's not all paid for. By the way, the Biden administration tries to shift the topic. It's all paid for. It's the millionaires and billionaires. And you get to the fine print. I always hate the millionaires and billionaires. Would you say it's not the excuse they use, but the premise, it's like they contextualize, oh, we're just going to pass this bill, but don't worry, the millionaires and billionaires are going to pay for it. Like it's an odious line because it's all based in greed and envy. Oh no, don't worry. You won't pay for it. It's these other people, they're going to pay for it. Well, what right do I have to their money? I mean, your right to my paycheck is non-existent. Or shouldn't be, regardless of how large it is or how small it is. But anyway, Biden's like, yeah, it's all free. Do you know what they do these, just to give you some inside baseball, I spent many years in Washington, D.C. covering politics up close. What they do when they say, oh, you won't add to the budget deficit, they make two fundamental errors that they know. Number one, they are basing these calculations on a static economy. And just to simplify it, it's to say, if we're going to spend $500, well, we're going to pay for that. We're going to spend $500 in programs. We're going to pay for that, those $500 in programs by taxing this group $500. And it's like a simple mathematical equation to them. That's a static analysis. But in the real world, we have a dynamic economy. And people make choices based off of the laws that are passed. There are incentives that are created, either to work harder, either to invest more in your business, either to start a new job or have some entrepreneurial venture, or to scale it back, depending on how much rope the government is giving you. I mean, if they're tightening up and promising you they're going to tax more of it and then do tax more of it, well, guess what? Your behavior as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, changes. It's dynamic, and this is just basic human nature, right? Our spending habits change as prices fluctuate. We can see that with gas going through the roof. We may wonder, should I drive out to this location knowing that I'm going to have to fill my gas tank and it's going to cost me $90 when it used to cost me $50? And we make these type of choices, but the government doesn't do that. They don't score these honestly. Number two is they only have these programs like 10 years out. So it's, oh, it's free child care. And they'll only budget it out for 10 years. So it may be within a 10-year period, supposedly deficit neutral and all paid for. But guess what? It doesn't end in 10 years. These entitlement programs spiral out of control. So you have to look at the long-term effect, and they never do it because they want to say within a 10-year period. Well, they never say within a 10-year period. They just say, oh, look, it's paid for. But really, after 10 years, it's not paid for, and the deficits explode after that. And they explode actually quite sooner because they try to score these, as I said, in a static nature, not a dynamic nature. But that wasn't the only thing Biden said. Biden, in the same press conference, said that, oh, you know, that gas-guzzling car you may have, the SUV, you know, if it's not a Prius, it's not a Tesla, well, you know, say goodbye.
We will take literally millions of automobiles off the road. Off the road. Saving tens of millions of barrels of oil.
That is this knucklehead's solution to rising gas prices, is to expunge cars that use engines and fossil fuel. We're going to take, Nicole, millions and millions of them off the road.
I just don't think he even, does he even knows know what he's saying there.
Does he think that everyone is like in Seattle? Oh, I'm going to drive my sporty Tesla. It's going to be my statement. It's like my fashion statement here with the Tesla. Guess what? Not everyone can afford a Tesla. Not everyone can even afford a Prius. This is the party, by the way, that says they're for the working man. Do you know how expensive electric cars are compared to a normal car? Far more expensive. Even a brand new, you know, even a Prius. You compare a Prius to another Toyota in its class or size, and it's far more expensive. But who is to say? Like, this is the conceit, the fatal conceit of leftists, is they think they can micromanage the economy, the country. We're going to take millions and billions of cars off the road. Or how about Joe Biden? The United States was the world's number one producer in fossil fuels, led the fracking revolution. Hey, why don't you start to open up federal lands? Why don't you start to encourage the drilling and the exploration of fossil fuels? Other countries are still doing it. China, India, other places, Russia. What we do in America will not affect global temperatures one bit. Not even one bit. But here he is, promising to take millions and millions of cars off the road. All right, I have to get this in the fastest 15. Nicole, I cringed at this ad. I cringed. Even though, you know, if I'm being honest, I'd probably vote for her if I were in Nevada, if she were the only choice against their current governor. But there's this woman who I don't know until I saw this ad. Her name is Michelle Fiore. She's running for governor of Nevada. They have a Democrat governor there, and the same mandate nonsense that we're seeing here is there. Here's her campaign ad, and it is maybe the cheesiest, most
awful. You gotta set it up. How she is in a truck.
Oh yeah. I was gonna set up after. We'll set up beforehand. Yeah. Okay. I encourage you to look it up too.
At least the scene.
She pulls up in a pickup truck in like the Nevada desert.
Yeah.
And she gets out, and you are fixated on. Am I trying to be crude here?
She's well endowed.
That's an understatement.
That's what we're just going to stop.
No.
She's well endowed.
I didn't know that.
And she's got a gun on her hip.
Okay. But I just want to say, I know you're saying she's well endowed, but this is not like it's not in a sexual, like, you're not like, oh my gosh,
no.
Look at this. This woman, you're like, oh my goodness. It's one of those, right? Like,
She's well endowed.
Okay.
And then she gets out of the truck, and then you hear this spiel, and she has a gun, and she's shooting bottles, and once, just so you know, it's kind of all happening.
Once you get past the, Nicole is saying the well-endowed, this is like...
People know what we're saying. Moving on.
Okay, once you get past that part, this is what happens, if you're listening in. This is a pickup truck. She pulls up, steps out.
I'm Michelle Fiore, and I'm running for governor.
And you're looking at one place right now.
I spent my whole life fighting the establishment. I was the first female majority leader in Nevada Assembly and one of the first electeds to endorse Donald J. Trump. And you better believe I was attacked for it. Washington Post called me a gun-toting calendar girl. And Politico magazine said that I was the Lady Trump. And I don't care. We need outsiders, fighters, not the same old, boring, moderate, compromise, Lou Blazer politicians.
Well, the guns are coming out.
Let's start with a three-shot plan.
Here we go.
Ban vaccine mandates, ban critical race theory, and stop voter fraud.
There we go.
The Joe Biden administration is coming after me. I'm Michelle Fiore, and I'm ready for the
fight. Are they, though? I don't know. I'm no fan of the Biden administration, but I don't think they're coming after her.
Well, they fight if she wins.
I don't think she's going to win.
It was embarrassing.
It was a terrible ad.
Yeah.
It was just cheesy. It was, honestly, it seemed like if someone was spoofing the MAGA crowd, they brought this, they made it.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It was bad.
Michelle Fiore. Okay. Well, that's the fastest 15. There is one, I don't know when we'll get to it, but I wanted to, this request for paternity.
We'll have to get to it now.
I know. It's insane.
Good tease.
Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Dory Monson. Just a lot more news-packed show for you here. And we'll be back in a flash. And we are back. Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Dory Monson. Producer Nicole, according to one Twitter user, wrangling me in. Isn't that true?
Yeah, kind of. That's
okay.
The gig.
I welcome it. That is the gig. You signed up for it, Nicole, and so did I by agreeing to guest host. And it's always a pleasure to guest host for Dory, and it's enjoyable. You too, Aaron. I enjoy you're here too.
Hey, happy to be here, Jason.
I know. I didn't want to leave you out. Aaron has one of these. Aaron has the radio voice. Is a radio voice. The news
you
voice
too,
you want.
Jason.
The
you
trusted.
Too.
Well, see, I can never deliver the news like you do. I just people wouldn't trust me.
Yeah.
If I straight up news, you know, I'm more in the commentary. But for you to, I mean, even when you're having a normal conversation, you just have that soothing news voice.
Thank you.
It's good.
It as a compliment.
It is a compliment.
Yeah,
it's a compliment.
That.
I mean, that's why you're doing what you're doing.
I try.
If I tried to fill in for Aaron, they'd be like, no.
Well, I can't do what you do. So, props to you.
All right. Well, you know, props all around. Nicole, I saw this story when I was doing news prep yesterday, and I was like, man, this is a great topic for conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can sort of see both sides of it, sort of, but it does strike me as the pendulum is going a little too far on these, I don't even have you, I'll get to it, on these, the time off from work, where people seem far more entitled to not working and getting a paycheck than due to working. So, it's out of Newsweek, and it's, the title is Workers Request for Paternity Leave, Paternity Leave to Look After New Puppy Sparks Debate. So this, this guy, his name is Roger Wade. He is in London. He has a, he's an entrepreneur. He has a company that delivers like a pop-up food and hospitality event spaces, two event spaces in the area in London. And he took to LinkedIn to ask a question, a serious to you know, his colleagues, that he wanted feedback. He said, one of my staff has asked for paternity leave because he has a new puppy. What do you think? And he wanted responses. So he, at least he's been a boss and he was considering it. One person wrote back, I would have loved a couple of weeks off. Oh yeah, who wouldn't, right? Or even just a few days to catch up on sleep, to be able to do my job the best of my abilities and settle my new family member. I'm sorry. Okay.
Isn't that, that's vacation.
Okay.
So take a vacation and do that.
But here's another person. I'm laughing because I have two sets of twins. Gosh. And I know what it is to be sleep deprived and take care of actual babies. Not fur babies, actual babies.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Another person wrote, some people are not fortunate enough to be able to have children, which is true. And having a dog is their fur baby and new addition to the family. Puppies also need love and support in their early days, just like a baby. Which is true. Who doesn't say puppies don't need love and support?
Again, that's, we have vacation.
No, they want paternity.
I know.
Sorry. Can you imagine? I can never, with a straight face, go to my boss. I don't have a boss, but if I did have a boss and say, hey boss, can I take paternity leave? I got a new puppy. You know, I got a new puppy. I need paternity leave.
Pupternity.
Pupternity. So now there was some a scintilla of sanity in this LinkedIn thread. A person wrote, the world has officially gone mad. This is an underlying issue with society, the fact that people feel entitled to everything. How about not have a dog as your work situation does not allow it? It's not your employer's issue or responsibility. If you feel that burning desire to get a dog, change your circumstances to allow it. I kind of lean towards that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like if you have kids. I mean, you've got to make the accommodations, right? You got to get a nanny or a daycare or whatever. Just like with the dog. If you don't have time for it, and then find somebody that you can hire that does. If you can't afford to hire, then you don't do it.
Or as this person said, just wait till your circumstances change where you can spend more.
Exactly.
I just don't get the mindset of asking.
Adopt an older dog.
Well, but asking my superior in an appointment setting.
I don't understand people's ethics right now. Like that, I feel so much pressure with this job, and this has been a conversation lately. But we have amazing ratings right now, and so I feel that pressure. Though all mm-hmm. of those people depend on us to bring them a show every day, right? And so, I mean, Dory's gone today and for a few days, and it's killing him to be gone. But at some point, you just have to do things for your family or for whatever. And it's the same thing with me. Like, it kills me to be away. I have to do it to stay sane, really, and to be able to bring you a show every day.
Decompress.
But you have to do those things. But I don't understand that looking for ways to get out of it. If that's the situation you're in, if you want to get out of work at all costs or whatever, then maybe you find a different job or maybe what you're working for. Because I know people are like, well, I can't find another job. I have a family. Okay. But then you're doing it. You have that as what you're doing it for. So you're staying, you're working, you're slaving away at a job you maybe don't like or whatever, but it's for this purpose, to feed your family, so you have something you're working towards. So everybody works for different reasons, whether they love it or whether they're doing it to feed their family or whatever.
But this is a dog. There's a dog we're talking about.
But that's what I'm saying. So you can't, I don't understand the, like, it's so easy to walk away from that responsibility for a dog or whatever. And I love animals. Oh. I love them. But I don't get that it's so easy to walk away from these responsibilities for
paternity leave.
A dog or a cat or, you know, I need some time away or whatever. I don't get it. I don't get it. I get vacation and like we get a couple weeks or a few weeks or whatever, but
I would be embarrassed. Though I'm trying to think of if I had, I would never do it. But I'm thoroughly embarrassed for this person who asked her employer, and then the employer should have been like, "What are you out of your mind? You want paternity? You want paternity leave? Who even comes up with this?"
As in, your employer pays for you
to sit and walk your dog and give your dog. Listen, no. I love dogs too. We have a dog. A little old. She's getting a little old.
I'm assuming maybe he wants to use his sick time or something. Like, no.
Yeah, he doesn't want to use.
Sick time is for. No. It's for times that you can't control how you feel or whatever.
It's going to become a thing.
Or kid.
It's going to become a thing. I think it will.
Be a trending thing for, you know, for the millennial crowd, the Amazon and the Facebook and all of those companies that are competing for people. It might be a thing for them
because they have more dogs, but they have more dogs than children.
Well, that, and it's a leg up for as a company, but they right? do. They hey, actually we do want, this for you, and they're like, oh, okay.
But they want fur babies. I can't tell you when people ask me how many, like, oh, do you have kids or something? I'm like, yeah, I have four. In Seattle, it's like, oh, you have four kids? It's like a horror show. I'm like, yes, I have four. We're big into procreation, me and my wife. My fur baby does not, it's not count.
I get the same when I tell people I have two cats. Two. I'm a crazy cat lady.
No, but two is not. That's two is not crazy cat lady status.
I like
that. Have you asked for paternity?
No.
My hey, Dory. Hey, Dory, I need to take off. What do you think Dory would say? I need paternity, Dory. I'm going to take off 2 weeks. What do you say? Right? Amazing. All right, Jason Matera. Here, I want to get to this, all kidding aside, is incredible exchange between Condoleezza Rice and the ladies of The View on critical race theory. And she sort of, she does stop them in their tracks with a really good answer. In a buttoned-up way that Condoleezza Rice does really well, taking an aerial view of a controversial issue. So we're going to get to that coming up with me, Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory Monson. Paternity, baby! Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. My name is Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory today. I'm back again with you tomorrow. Fun times and a lot of activity and news coming down the pipeline that we have planned for the show. And I'm looking forward to all of it. Right now, I wanted to get, before we lose track of this, because this is a very important bite, audio. Condi Rice, for some reason, went on The View. I don't know why. I don't know why anyone goes on The View. I don't know why anyone gets their news from The View or their. I don't know what purpose. Maybe you can help me, Nicole. What purpose the news, the View, exists for? Like, what does it satisfy?
I don't know. I don't know.
But it exists.
Echo, I guess, because they forced everybody that thinks differently than them out. So, I don't know.
But it's not. You don't get any like major revelatory insight from watching The View on politics, right? If I want to get political insight, The View is like this to me. It's like if I said, "Oh, I want some political insight. I'm gonna go read comic books." Like, wait, what? So the View is the comic book version of political insight, but for television. These people don't know what they're talking about, and they just yell at each other. And especially whoever is a conservative. But anyway, Condi Rice went on there. And the subject of critical race theory was brought up. Now, in the context, and I know Dory has spoken about this, but the critical race theory, the proponents either say, well, no, it's not taught in the classroom, or then they try to justify why it is taught in the classroom. And they haven't really made up their minds. We have the Attorney General's office sent out a letter that effectively branded parents who are raising awareness about critical race theory and going to school board meetings, branded them as domestic terrorists for trying to be involved in their kids' education. So it's been a hotly talked about subject. So here is Condi Rice. And Condi Rice, she's the the president of Stanford University. She's always been very impressive. She's well-polished, well-spoken. And here's what she had to say.
But if I could take a moment to talk about the whole issue of critical race theory and what is and is not being taught. I come out of an academic institution, and this is something that academics debate. What is the role of race and so forth? And let me be very clear. I grew up in segregated Birmingham, Alabama. Mm-hmm. I couldn't go to a movie theater or to a restaurant with my parents. I went to segregated schools till we moved to Denver. Mm-hmm. My parents never thought I was going to grow up in a world without prejudice, but they also told me that's somebody else's problem, not yours. You're going to overcome it, and you are going to be anything you want to be. And that's the message that I think we ought to be sending to kids. One of the worries that I have about the way that we're talking about race is that it either seems so big that somehow white people now have to feel guilty for everything that happened in the past. I don't think that's very productive. Or black people have to feel disempowered by race. I would like black kids to be completely empowered, to know that they are beautiful in their blackness. But in order to do that, I don't have to make white kids feel bad for being white. So somehow this is a conversation that has gone in the wrong direction.
That last part, you don't have to watch.
Yeah, you know, there's a little bit of it. In order for black kids who, quite frankly, for a long time, the way they were portrayed, the way their history was portrayed, it was second-class citizenship.
Of course.
But I don't have to make white children feel bad about being white in order to overcome the fact that black children were...
How do you think? I have a couple examples here. Yeah.
Some common sense truth bombs dropped by Condi. Here is Sonny Houston, who responded with this.
There's been this sort of rollback of history. People want to hide history.
Yes, that is true.
And what we are seeing is this rollback of history. Parents don't want children to hear about the real history.
When we teach
children about the real history, I think that is when we will really have true
People are being taught the true history, but I just have to say one more thing. It goes back to how we teach the history.
That's what I'm saying.
We teach the good and we teach the bad of history.
Yes. Yeah,
but
right.
What we don't do is make 7- and 10-year-olds feel that they are somehow bad people because of the color of their skin. We've been through that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we don't need to do that again.
We don't want anybody to feel that.
Precisely.
There we go. Especially you, Whoopi Goldberg. There we go. Condi Rice. Just doing what she does best, articulating basic common sense. Jason Matera, guest hosting for Dory Monson. Coming up next, we got the big lead.